You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 3rd of June, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I don't know. I'll let you know in a little while, but today we're talking about one of my favorite global politicians. And something that really none of our people are talking about right now, which is not a huge shock, but this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I noticed it was in the news last week, obviously not in the mainstream news. It was in the alternative news. It's lots and lots of pictures of happy Syrians celebrating. No mention of it at all in the mainstream press. And of course, this is the Syrian elections that have taken place, and Bashar al-Assad has won the election. After over a decade of US aggression against Syria and its people, overwhelmingly popular Bashar al-Assad is the only president the vast majority of the country's people want as their leader. It's a reality the US-dominated West and their press agent media suppress in their misinformation, disinformation, and fake news about him and all other things related to the Syrian Arab Republic. Assad is more popular now than when re-elected in June 2014, where he had 89% majority support. On May the 26th, he overwhelmingly won with a 95.1% majority, announced on Friday by Parliamentary Speaker Hamouda Sabak. There was never any doubt about his triumph, only by how great a majority to be known after the ballots were counted. Turnout was 78.64%, a remarkable show of support for the Republic and its leader at a time of war and foreign occupation of northern and southern parts of the country, including by diaspora Syrian refugees who were also able to cast ballots. Presidential aspirants Mahmoud Merai and Abdullah Salom Abdullah won 3.3% and 1.5% support, respectively. And the Speaker Sabag added, "According to Article 86 of the Constitution and Item B of Article 79 of the General Election Law, and in light of the fact that Mr. Bashar al-Assad gained the majority of the votes, with 95.1%, I have the pleasure to announce the winning of Dr. Bashar al-Assad with the post of President of the Syrian Arab Republic. In Damascus, Latakia, Homs, and other parts of the country, large numbers of Syrians took to the streets to celebrate Assad's re-election, a reality completely ignored by Western regimes and their press agent media." And of course, the Western regimes are all saying, well, this is an illegitimate election. But I don't really see how they can say that. It was really only the Western regimes that were preventing the Syrians from voting. So-called Syrian refugees that are in Europe, they were not allowed to actually take part in this election. But Syrian refugees that were in Lebanon and all throughout the Middle East and the Near East, they were allowed to take part in this election. There was a massive turnout, and as it says here, he won even more votes than he did back in 2014. What are your thoughts on Bashar al-Assad's momentous re-election, Matt?
Well, there's so much to be said here. You're right. Most of Europe, the US, the UK, Saudi Arabia, refused to allow Syrian citizens living in those countries to vote back in 2014. And the other day, you had massive amounts of support outside of Syria, especially Lebanon. And most of the world permits, you know, what turns out to be millions of Syrian citizens to vote overwhelmingly for Assad. Of course, he's going to get a lot of support prior to the violence. His economy was doing extremely well, as I was the only one to report at the time. Just, you know, a little more than 10 years ago, before all this started. The rallies against Assad were dwarfed by pro-Assad rallies. You had a huge development in the Syrian economy and pride in the army. That's why they had to go from nonviolent to violent means. The fact that the U.S. refused to permit Syrian citizens to vote. They're so concerned about these refugees, but refusing to allow them, knowing full well where their votes are going to go. You had election observers from all over the planet: Algeria, Oman, Russia, Iran, Nicaragua, Bolivia, South Africa, Cuba, Ecuador, observing this. The U.S. refused to send anybody. And while this election took place in the 26th of May, the U.S. condemned the election on April 21st. So as always, they condemned the election a month before it happened. So that's the absurdity here. And of course, in rebel-held areas, which are like maybe 20% of the country, the local leaders refused to permit any Syrians to vote at all. So the whole thing, of course, is a farce, not from Assad's point of view, but from the opposition point of view.
Well, that's the incredible thing, isn't it? 80% turnout. I mean, about the most you get, I think, in Britain, we had 60%, I think, turnout for the Brexit vote. I mean, you're never going to get a 60% turnout for a parliamentary vote. And yet here there's an 80% turnout. And yet we're told that they don't have a democracy over there. Well, on Friday, the New York Times reported nothing about Assad's triumph. Washington Post published an Associated Press news propaganda report saying Syrian President Bashar al-Assad was re-elected in a landslide following an election described as illegitimate and a sham by the West and his opposition. There's nothing illegitimate about Syria's democratic process. Shaming fantasy versions in the US and other Western countries, the fake news Associated Press report also falsely claimed that no independent monitors watched proceedings at polling stations on Wednesday. Monitoring delegations were there from Russia, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Ecuador, Armenia, and perhaps other countries. None showed up from the West, though, their ruling authorities wanting information about Assad's legitimate re-election suppressed. Opening at 7 a.m, more than 12,000 polling stations let Syrians cast ballots right up until midnight to accommodate the maximum numbers wanting to participate. And you would imagine that, the West would really want to be there so that they could say, look, we saw all this intimidation. We saw these voters were being intimidated to vote for Assad. We saw people that were being attacked because they wanted to vote for the opposition. But no, they can't say that because they weren't there. And what is this opposition that they are talking about? The opposition that were in Syria got 1% and 3%. So clearly they're not actually talking about opposition. They're talking about enemies of the country. They're talking about puppets that they have in Turkey. Do you know anything about the opposition? What about the opposition that actually did get voted for? Are they actually in Syria? Do you know, Matt?
Yeah, the two guys that ran against them. And by the way, I'm reading the state media, excuse me, the Sana press analysis. And it's been very fair. Marai is from if he was part of the so-called Damascus Spring in 2000-2001, he's part of the Democratic Socialist Arab Union. And the other one, of course, Abdullah, who comes from the Socialist Unionist Party. The Sana press agency treated these men very fairly. They were extreme. I'm reading all these articles in English, and it's excellent. They're being fair. They're talking about their platform. No one's going to run in that country being pro-Israel or pro-US. That's absolutely impossible. And you're right. You're talking about opposition, so-called opposition, who are taking up arms. And the West has the nerve to say that, well, these elections are illegitimate because 20% or whatever it is of Syria is under can't vote. Forgetting, of course, they had no problem with the fact that in the Ukrainian elections, you had the entire eastern part of the country refusing to vote in these elections. But they cheered Poroshenko's victory. And probably the worst of all is 1864 in the U.S., where the entire southern part of the country, and even, like Kentucky almost hardly voted at all. And Lincoln controlled the press. This is not a problem for these people. And Lincoln is a hero for all of this. So the two guys, some of these Abdullah, the Socialist Unionist Party is not a terrible institution. Mahmoud is probably a little bit worse. But, you know, again, Mahmoud is has Western financing. Now the system, the Constitution, says that of course you can't be convicted of any crime to run for office. So many of these opposition guys could never run. You have to be Islamic. You can't have any dual citizenship. And you can't be married to a foreigner or have any of these foreign connections. So as far as the opposition goes, these guys are the best you can have. They're not offering anything else. Even the CIA back in 2014 said Assad is going to win any fair election. And you're right, talking about the Western powers refusing to send anybody there, knowing full well. I just saw the Wikipedia article where they say that the official news agency shows people voting without privacy. As if the state news agency, which they claim is totally pro-Assad, is going to permit that kind of a video to be shown. They really have very little against this election procedure. The polls were open for a very long period of time. You had gigantic – I mean, they're trying to claim that the overwhelming majority of the eligible voters refused to vote, which is nonsense. And you have observers from all over the place saying that this is as fair as you could possibly get under the conditions of civil war. When you have a man who's led a country through this kind of civil war and is still in the process of rebuilding, the economy is growing a little bit under these conditions, bringing in investment from Russia and China and elsewhere, yeah, he's going to be very popular. He's an extremely popular man. And prior to the shooting, the Syrian economy was doing very well.
So the opposition, really, that the West backs are basically terrorists. So they've taken up arms against the government. So that would be the equivalent of allowing terrorist groups to take part in Western elections. And as you pointed out there, Matt, you've got the same situation in Ukraine, where part of Ukraine wasn't voting, and yet the West accepts that as a legitimate vote. So once again, we see this hypocrisy there. Following his electoral triumph, Assad thanked Syrians for their high sense of nationalism and their notable participation, adding, "For the future of Syria's children and its youth, let's start from tomorrow our campaign of work to build hope and build Syria." Russian election monitors reported that Syria's process was open, free and fair. Wednesday's election was held with no violations of international rules. According to Russia's foreign ministry envoy at large, Vladimir Churov, Syria's main election threat was foreign orchestrated terrorism and obstruction of its process. As expected, the Biden regime and complicit UK-EU partners defied reality by falsely calling Syria's process neither free nor fair. Their ruling regimes have been waging preemptive war on Syria since March 2011, including the use of ISIS, other jihadists, and the White Helmets as proxy foot soldiers against Syrian sovereignty and its people. The West and Israel also falsely blame Assad for crimes of war, crimes against humanity, and atrocities committed by their own ruling regimes and jihadist foot soldiers against Syria and its people. Blaming the victim is a long-standing policy by the West, the Jewish state, and their press agent media. In the aftermath of Assad's re-election, endless US-led aggression on Syria and its people continues with no prospect for near-term resolution because the Biden regime, like its predecessors, rejects restoration of peace and stability to the country. And the same goes for US wars by hot and or other means against other countries worldwide. The bit that I really like about this is the fact that he's mentioning, you know, they need to work for the future of their children. And he mentions that he's glad of their high sense of nationalism. It's the nationalism that he is praising here because he is a nationalist president. And that tells us why there is this campaign against him, because he is actually doing what is best for his people rather than doing what is best for the globalists. He rejects this new world order that we're having forced upon us. What do you make of what was just quoted here, Matt?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the nationalism angle, because that's a big deal for him. It was in 1991, I wrote the first paper praising his father, Hafez al-Assad, general in the Air Force, for his what were almost explicitly national socialist policies. Remember, Bashar never wanted power. He was a successful doctor in Great Britain. His brother Basil was supposed to take over. He was killed in the car accident. God knows if it was, you know, real or not. And power, you know, he was doing very well. He had a very quiet life. This is not something he wants. Who the heck wants to be in power in Syria right now? This is not something – he's not going to rig an election for something he'd rather not do in the first place. And having to deal – knowing full well that ISIS is an American creation, that they consistently, both in 2014 and in now, were engaging in all forms of terrorist acts against against polling stations and people waiting to vote. And this, again, same thing in 2014. There was local newspaper articles in English and in Arabic talking about threats from the CIA organizations to destroy the election process. But the Sana News Agency has been excellent on this. But what do you expect? I mean, I was the very first one to talk about the Assad's nationalism, their economic policies, breaking the back of the Western financed oligarchs, which of course was an Assad family policy for a long time. And he has tremendous support, especially among, I mean, almost all Christians support Assad there. And if there's anyone out there other than Lukashenko, you can call a firm national socialist, it is Assad in every respect. The Ba'ath Party, even the Nasserite parties, have this as their core set of doctrines.
The Syrians
work.
As I say, the Syrians are very lucky to have him. I mean, it's always the worst kind of people that try to get to power, and he got into power by default. He was an eye doctor. He didn't want to be a politician, and yet he is leading this country, and that's the perfect person to lead a country, I would suggest. Well, let's have a closer look at what went on here. Let's have a look. So we'll start with the statistics. The total number of eligible voters in the country and in the diaspora reached 18,107,109. The total number of voters who cast their votes, 14,239,140, which is an overwhelming turnout of 78.64%. The total number of votes the incumbent President Bashar al-Assad received, 13,540,860. That is 95.1%. The total number of Mr. Mahmoud Ahmad Marai received, 470,276 votes. That's 3.3%. The total number that Mr. Abdullah Salam Abdullah received, 213,968 votes. That's 1.5%. There were massive rallies all over the country, flooding the streets of every city in support of President Assad, starting from the 16th of the month when the campaign started. The Syrians packed all the cities waiting for the results while in joy, as they consider this the main milestone in their victory over the US-waged war of terror and war of attrition over a whole decade. President Assad's re-election was anticipated. The Syrian people are a people full of pride, and they honour their heroes who fight for them, and they despise those who have betrayed them. A high turnout of the voters for the elections was also expected, but not at the levels we have followed in all the cities across the country, save the Al-Qaeda stronghold in Idlib, which is run by the Turkey-sponsored Nusra Front, or Al-Qaeda Levant, and parts of northeastern Syria that are under the control of the US-sponsored Kurdish SDF separatist terrorists. The enemies of Syria in the USA, the EU, the Gulf states, Israel, Al-Qaeda, and the Kurdish SDF terrorists have declared their intentions not to recognize the Syrian presidential election, citing various different reasons. And that was before the elections even took place. But thankfully, their recognition is not required by the Syrian constitution. I think this Syrian constitution, didn't that come about after the 2014 election, and that was created with all the different minority groups and supposedly by the opposition. So if he's actually fulfilled everything that is in that constitution, he is legitimately elected. So what grounds are these other countries standing on to say that they're not going to recognize him? Do you know, Matt?
Well, I've hinted at a couple of them already. The grounds are that, you know, Assad simply can't win. Legitimacy is if Assad loses. That's the very definition of it. This has been the case for a long time. Remember, when the West refers to democracy, they're referring to liberalism. They're not referring to a procedure of voting and free speech. Clearly, free speech is guaranteed in Syria, and the opposition, small as it is even in state-run press. So, you know, Assad You know, and he won this election in a time of economic crisis, obviously, given the Civil War. But he engaged in a huge amnesty program just before the election. You had all kinds of people who were considered political prisoners being freed so that they were able to vote. And of course, the West, you know, either didn't report this or denied it or claimed that this is all just propaganda. And then the regime says that he had social media critics he released just before the election to make sure that it was fair. When you're that popular, when your record is that good, when you've won a war, there's nothing that will promote a government's popularity than a won war against all odds. It's a miracle that he had any opposition whatsoever. And as far as the opposition goes, these two are the best they can do. They have, unless they're actually gun-toting terrorists, they really have no unified front. They have no unified agenda. This is the best they can do. It's a miracle they got over 1%.
Will they be allowed to take part in the government? Part of a coalition? Do they say, well, if you've got a certain percentage of the votes, you can take part in what's going on? Do you know?
Well, he's been doing that from the beginning, as you mentioned. These elections, the Constitution. Remember, the UN wants to completely rewrite the Constitution. The UN's claim is that because they're not running these elections and they haven't rewritten the Constitution explicitly, therefore the elections are fraudulent. You have multi-party system for parliamentary elections. You have a coalition system there, no different than any other country. I'm not sure if it's winner-take-all or proportional off the top of my head. But you have full freedom of speech. And the only thing that you can't really do, and that's public opinion, is pro-Israel, pro-U.S., free trade. There's no support for that in the country. And therefore, no one. I mean, the opposition figures are talking just like Assad, saying they could do it better, because that's the only position in the country that is going to get any support. So that's been Assad's position from the very beginning. It's always been a coalition mindset.
Well, the constitutionally scheduled election went ahead despite a UN-led peace process that failed to fulfill the UN Resolution 2254 objectives. Through the course of numerous meetings, a new constitution was never drafted or ratified, which made the 2021 election necessary to fulfil the existing constitution's mandate. The UAE, Oman, Bahrain, Jordan, Lebanon and Kuwait all allowed Syrians in their countries to participate in the early vote in the presidential election organised by Damascus on May 20th, which shows a growing Gulf flexibility in dealing with Damascus. The central government in Damascus controls 70% of the country and still offers free medical care and education. Through the Ministry of Health, Syrians are being vaccinated for COVID-19 through a highly organized process of medical clinics at the neighborhood level. The universities of Damascus, Aleppo and Latakia are graduating doctors and nurses who will work in the public health sector as well as private facilities. Rallies with thousands of people waving Syrian flags and holding pictures of President Assad were held across the country. The large support for President Assad among citizens inside Syria is based on many reasons. Many voters long for a return to stability and peace, which they recall they're having before 2011. Supporters of President Assad don't blame him for the conflict, but understand the US-NATO war on Syria for regime change and to steal resources. It is not lost on voters that the conflict began in Deraa just after a huge gas field was discovered in the Syrian waters. Perhaps one of the biggest factors explaining voters' support for President Assad is the wish to maintain the secular government. Syria is the only secular government in the Middle East. In a country of 18 sects, peace and stability were maintained through a secular administration which also served to protect religious freedom and the right to worship. Syria was home to Jews, Christians, and Muslims who lived, studied, and worked side by side in harmony. The US-NATO plan for regime change in Syria was based on the support of followers of radical Islam, such as the Muslim Brotherhood and others who have been promoted by the West. President Assad warned the Western leaders that by feeding a monster, it could turn to bite you. After multiple attacks on French soil, France's Macron has declared his own war on radical Islam. On May 3rd, Khalid bin al-Hamaydan, Saudi Arabia's head of the General Intelligence Directorate, landed in Damascus and met with President Assad and his Deputy for Security Affairs, Brigadier General Ali Mamluk. It is speculated the meeting was to discuss reopening the Saudi embassy in Damascus and the first step in restoring relations between the two countries, A follow-up meeting is expected shortly. The United Arab Emirates reopened its embassy in Syria on December 2018, and Oman reappointed an ambassador in Damascus in October 2020. So it looks like these Middle Eastern countries are starting to be friendly again. What do you make of that? Is it a genuine friendship, do you think, Matt?
It's simply based on the idea that not only has he won the war, but because of winning the war, among other things, he's extremely popular. And what you just read states something very important. The whole civil war was started quite literally one day after the Iranian-Syrian pipeline was founded. You have the massive oil found on off the Syrian coast in 2010, 14 new fields, a huge number. Syria was not known as an oil producer until recently. And all of a sudden, then, you had the so-called spontaneous demonstrations. But, you know, you have, you know, in 2010, you had a growth of the Syrian economy of 5%. You had a huge trade surplus, a foreign exchange reserves over $20 billion. Inflation never went beyond 3%. Unemployment was about 7%. And, you know, and it really was Michael Oren, who is the Israeli ambassador, said in 2013, the greatest danger to Israel is the arc from Tehran to Damascus to Beirut. And Assad is a keystone in that arc. So it's very clear what this is really all about. The fact that he, you know, if he wasn't popular, it would be very easy to condemn him. But the fact how serious this is, that these people started this war just as this gas and oil was discovered. The day after the pipeline, I think the Iranians call it the Islamic pipeline, was ground was broken. This is such an obvious case of foreign interference, and he's defeated all comers. And so, if he wasn't a politician years ago, he certainly is now.
Well, we've never actually been told why we've gone to war against Syria. We've just been told, oh, he's killing his own people. But he can't be killing his own people if 80% of them have come out to vote for him. But they're still putting more sanctions on Syria. On June 17th last year, the US implemented the CSAR Act, America's latest round of draconian sanctions against the Syrian people, to protect them, it claims. This was after years of bombing civilians and providing support to anti-government militants, leading to the proliferation of terrorists who kidnap, imprison, torture, maim, and murder the very same civilians. Sanctions have impacted Syria's ability to import medicines and the raw materials needed to manufacture them, medical equipment, and the machines and materials needed to manufacture prosthetic limbs, among many other things. But sanctions have yet another brutal effect. They wreak havoc on the economy. A May 3rd, 2021 opinion piece by Abby Mako on the website of the South African Broadcasting Corporation noted that electricity rationing in Syria has reached its highest levels due to the government's inability to secure the fuel needed to generate electricity. This is mainly due to the damaging international economic sanctions led by the Western powers, including the investigation and identification team of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons and their protagonists in France, UK and the US. The value of the Syrian pound has crumbled to almost nothing. The CSAR Syria Civilian Protection Act of 2019 is credited with bringing about starvation, darkness, plague, misery, robbery, kidnappings, increased mortality rate, and the certain destruction of a nation that was once a beacon of hope across the Middle East. Now, I'm confused at this, Matt. Syria has lots of oil, so why have they got problems finding the fuel for the electricity stations?
Well, even the mainstream press has talked about the Western forces and the their ISIS proxies taking over some of these fields. The offshore fields, to my understanding, are in Russian hands, but I can't verify that off the top of my head. And these oil fields are recently discovered, just before the shooting started. So how well developed they are, I simply don't know. Now, Turkey also has taken over some of these fields. But these sanctions had nothing to do with Assad. It was breaking the back of the Syrian economy, which was again going to be your first world economy, and therefore exhausting the population so that any organization could come in and simply take over. That's what this is about. This UN statement that you mentioned, this is about the United Nations and the US taking over the constitutional and the election process. So they're not being, you know, and the whole point is, of course, to take over these resources and to break the ability of Iran to counter American and Israeli violence in the area. So this is, you know, but most people have no idea what this is all about. And yet this is a flashpoint of World War III.
Well, just taking a look back at 2014, at the last election, it was semi-miraculous that they could actually hold elections at that time. This was prior to the Russians coming in to help fight ISIS and Al-Qaeda. The rebels still held much of the country and were creating one mini Saudi Arabia after another in their areas, usually driving out religious minorities and often killing them outright, establishing a harsh interpretation of Sharia law as the rule of law, including having many Saudis as the Sharia court judges, forcing women to be fully covered, whereas in secular Syria, women may wear what they wish, and all this while the US and its allies were calling them freedom fighters. The US-backed freedom fighters refused to allow their people to participate in the 2014 election. Some of the groups, like Ara al-Sharam, that is, received advanced weapons and all kinds of other support from the US, put up billboards proclaiming that democracy is haram. Not only did Obama, Biden, Hillary Clinton and John Kerry's favourite head-chopping moderate rebels refuse to let their people vote, but they made many attacks on the Syrians who were voting. They killed a reported 150 people that day at voting centres or on their way to them. This Syrian election was observed by many foreign delegations, but it was the results in Lebanon which really proved their validity. The turnout was massive amongst Syrian expats and refugees, braving a punishing summer heatwave and some standing in line for 15 hours. There was much singing and dancing. The lines were reportedly almost 2 kilometres long, and the polls had to open the next day to handle the flood. Now retired Virginia State Senator Richard Black met with Syrians in Beirut, and some women showed him where they had nicked their index finger with a sharp knife so that they could vote for Bashar al-Assad with their blood. Western journalists, in their reporting of the huge crowds with often jubilant voters, tried in vain to portray them as being forced. What a horrid and criminal joke the Western news media is. And still the US and other Western countries determined to undermine the legitimacy of the Syrian government and its leader in the hoped-for regime change terrorist proxy war, condemned the election as invalid. I mean, that's. Do you think that's truthful? Do you think they really were actually voting for him with their own blood, Matt?
It makes a lot of sense, only because everyone there has lost somebody to this civil war. They certainly don't blame Assad for this. But the state senator, Richard Black, has taken my research, and he's made a big deal of condemning American foreign policy there. And he was the one who reported this. He was over there. And again, this is the stuff that I was talking about back in 2012 about what Assad is, what the regime wants to do to him, and why. And now, of course, it's our people are talking about Assad all the time as a good guy, but they were a Soviet client state not that long ago. And so that's why, you know, why I was condemned at the time now. But of course, everything I said turned out to be true. But this huge, these huge lines of voting have to do with Assad, and has to do with the fact that everyone has lost family members to this war that the West created.
Quite incredible, isn't it? All these politicians that tried to take him down, they've all been knocked out of the game, and Assad is still there. You can't Mossad the Assad. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.